This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
It's like a youth activity at the synagogue on a Sunday. It's Rothenberg and Rosenberg.
Yes.
Were you a part of a youth group?
I couldn't get out of the Hebrew school livelihood quickly enough.
You hated like, Hebrew school.
Oh, my God. Like, the second I finished my bar mitzvah, can I please be done? And then there were these animals, Peter. I don't know if you had this. Oh, I'm going to go on to Hebrew high school. Hebrew high school? No.
Wait no. What?
Yeah.
Hebrew high school meaning you continue your Jewish education into your
through high school. Yes.
No. My parents always had the deal with me. You go through your bar mitzvah, you call it a day.
Yeah, and that was it. And that's what I'm doing with my kids. So I had to go. I don't know what your situation was.
Oh, mine was intense. Go ahead.
3 days a week.
Me too.
Like, it felt torturous. Torturous. So it was Tuesdays for 2 hours, Thursdays for 2 hours, and Sunday mornings from 11 to 1:15. And I remember, Peter, begging my father, not my mom, because she would have said, you got to stay till 1:15. I said, Dad, you have to pick me up at 12:50 and rush me home so I'm home by 1 o'clock.
Well, you had priorities.
And he thankfully would do that. But no, Hebrew school is, it's semi-torturous. And I say
let's be honest.
A proud Jew.
And as a proud Jew myself, I sit there regularly and listen to my girlfriend speak Hebrew on the phone to her family. Do you want to know how many words I understand? Thanks
you,
to my years.
You understand zero.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm going to now, assuming God willing that Natalie and I have a life together, I'm going to have to learn again. And I'll have a foundation. I'll have some level of foundation, but I don't speak Hebrew at all.
Can I ask a question which is somewhat personal and you can say, I don't want to answer this and let's move on to the calls or whatever. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Might I ask
okay.
that question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is she Israeli?
That's right.
I didn't realize that.
She is.
So she hails from Israel.
if you were introducing her, you would say hailing from.
Yes.
No, actually you wouldn't because her parents are hailing from Israel. So her parents moved here in 1979. She was born in Queens, but her household is an Israeli household. Her parents speak Hebrew. That's the first language of the house.
Nice.
And when I'm there, I do my best to, you know, drop in a random word or two. But it's really embarrassing how little we know.
I'm sure. Do you walk in the house and be like, boy, it's hot in here?
Why?
I'm schwitzing all over.
Well, that's the problem, though. Words like schwitzing, and by the way, for people who aren't Jewish out there, you have to understand there's Jews who are Sephardic and Jews who are Ashkenazic. And if you're an Ashkenazic Jew like I am, and Dave, I imagine you are, we culturally have a lot of differences. So words like schwitzing don't even really mean anything there.
Really?
Like, Yiddish isn't a part of their life at all.
They poo-poo schwitzing?
I'm not saying they poo-poo it. It's just nothing. For example, when Natalie and I got together, shortly thereafter, her grandmother passed away, sadly, in Israel. And a friend of mine said, oh, please send her my condolences on her bubby. And I said, I could say that, but she wouldn't know who her bubby was. It's not a word. It means nothing.
Oh, you've blown my mind.
I know. They don't.
You've absolutely blown my mind.
Listen, we'll do.
Hey, guys, we just got a call from Nielsen. Everybody turn their radio off, so let's get.
Oh, you know what? Well, then guess what? Nielsen, well, I don't want to say it, but they're raging somethings. Michael Kay joining us after the big Yankee victory.
Dave, thank you for doing this, buddy.
You're very welcome.
We celebrated you today, Michael.
How so?
Well, we
your
saw
call
that
from last night was glorious. Yeah.
And for the first time in history, you're trending for positive reasons.
Why am I trending?
People are just replaying the call.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they? Question for you: do they always shoot you video wise when you're doing calls? Like, is the whole game shot on video, or is it just because that was a huge moment they decided to put a camera on you?
There's a camera on the booth all the time. I'm not certain if there's a camera that runs into a tape machine, but I guess they had it at that point. But there's always a camera on us. We don't do that. I think SNY does that a lot. They always send out when Gary makes a call, but we have not done
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's I've almost never seen that from you, though. That's
yeah, I'm very shy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Michael, it truly was one of your – I was telling Dave earlier, listen, I don't tell you I love every call of yours. I tell you when I mean it. Last night's call was something.
Thank you, man.
Really good.
I don't know what to say.
It was a beautiful call. You just take it and own it. It was very well done.
You know what? You go back and talk about Ashkenazi Jews. Go ahead. I'm cool.
See? I knew you wouldn't mind now.
See ya! So, Dave, who do you think's better, the Yankees or the Mets?
That's a great question. I would say at the – well, currently constituted, or do I have Jacob DeGrom?
Currently constituted.
I would say the Yankees at the moment are probably the better team.
All right, so with Jacob DeGrom?
In a series or over 162?
Over 162.
I think it's almost a dead heat.
Do you think they're going to play in the World Series?
No.
Why not? Too many things can go wrong?
Because it's hard to get to the World Series. I mean, the Yankees haven't been there in a long time. The Mets have been there once in a long time. I mean, it doesn't happen often. For everything to work out perfectly, Michael, I think is probably unrealistic. Now, the Yankees, I think right at the moment, are probably the best team in the American League. But as good as the Mets are, I don't even know if they're the best team in the National League. And now I have the question mark with DeGrom. So I would say I wouldn't be shocked, but I would say unlikely that they're facing each other in the World Series.
Wow. But you'd be happy if they did.
No, I'd be happy if the Mets won the World Series after facing the Yankees.
So would you rather the Mets
make the World Series and lose? Yes.
Or you'd rather them not get there?
Correct. I would prefer, and I stand by this. I'll tell you what.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll go one further on you, and I think you will call – I don't think you'll say fraud. I think you'll say something's wrong with me. I would prefer the Mets to go 81-81 and miss the postseason than win 109 games and lose in the World Series to the Yankees.
Very fair. I couldn't agree with you more. I used to warn Yankee fans when they kept saying after 2003, oh, we want the Red Sox again. I said, you know, one day it's going to turn, and then you're never going to be able to live it down, ever, ever, ever live it down. And as I always say this, if the world is spinning in 23-22 and Joe Buck the Ninth is calling the World Series, you're going to have that graphic, only team to blow a 3-0 lead. It's going to be the 2004 Yankees. So, yeah, be careful what you wish for. I couldn't agree with you more. That loss would be too painful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not over 2,000 yet, so to think about losing to the Yankees again, and the Yankees were clearly a better team in 2000. The Mets outfield was laughable, but to have to endure that again, no, I don't want any part of that.
Now, Dave, before you go, who was worse at his job, Phil Jackson, the GM, or Dave Gettleman?
I'll say this. Dave Gettleman pains me more than Phil Jackson.
Because the Giants more.
I love the Giants. So, what I mean... They're still dealing with Gettleman, Michael. They had to cut a really good cornerback because Dave Gettleman is incompetent and is
not getting fleeced.
He's awful. I can't stand Dave Gettleman.
Wow.
Would you say it to his face if you saw him?
I would go nose to nose, like right before they do it when they do the weigh-ins for a boxing match. I'd get right up in his grill and say,
"I've tried in the past.
You stunk at your job.
Do you hate him enough?" Do you hate him enough that if you were at a game and he walked past you, you'd yell something inappropriate?
Yes.
Wow.
I think Dave Gettleman could throw you a beating, obviously.
This is a big boy, 74 years old.
Oh, so he's a big, strong man with a very tough accent.
You know what? I'd like to drop the gauntlet right now on your big show.
Yeah.
If he would like to go at it, I'd like to fight him.
So you would have a charity boxing match against Dave Gettleman?
Yes.
This is big.
And he will not be charitable during the boxing match, though, Peter. He will not be charitable.
I'm as healthy as a hoss.
He's healthy as a hoss.
Let's go.
Now, Dave, I'm told that you have to leave.
I do.
Ah, you know what? It was so glorious that you decided to step in for Don and talk with Peter for a while. And I can't thank you enough. I owe you a lot.
Well, it's my pleasure. This is a very important show. I was asked to do a 1 hour pinch hit duty, and I'm thrilled to have been able to do it. So I'll hand the baton over to you guys, and I will gracefully bow out right now.
God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Yankees win 5-3 at the stadium, so they take 4 out of 5 on their mini homestand. Now they begin an 8-game road trip starting tomorrow night with the Chicago White Sox. And we'll break down tonight's or today's win and also point out that everything is not rosy. But as Peter knows, one of my sayings is winning is a great deodorant. but I'll point some of the things out that have to concern you just a bit. It's Kay, Rosenberg, Rothenberg, and you right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael Kay Show.
And the 1-2. Throw deep to left field. There it goes. See ya.
You have Aaron Judge able to now quote the great Fat Joe.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Judge right now is on pace, I believe, for about 50 home runs, 110, 115 RBIs, batting in the 280s. If Judge stays healthy, this could be an MVP season, and the Steinbrenner family and Brian Cashman will be put in a position where if they don't sign Aaron Judge, the fan base will riot.
The Michael Kay Show.
The Yankees could be in a completely unenviable situation.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Well, it is a conundrum, everybody, as Dave and Peter spoke about. But if you're going to root and you're the Yankees, that's the way you're rooting. You want them to have a great year. And Brian Cashman said today that we're not going to talk about it in the media. I'm not going to say whether or not we are discussing it or if we will discuss it. I think that's the smart way to do it because once it becomes public, it can become contentious and then the public gets involved and I don't think that's needed. So if you want to talk on the side with his agent, do it. And if there's no deal, then you don't have to say anything. And if there's a deal, announce it to great fanfare and name him the captain and move on. But to make it a public spectacle, I think only makes it more difficult to come to an agreement. I think they will speak at some point during the season. But, you know, what Dave and Peter said is true. The price didn't go down. The price didn't go down. Now, if you're a businessman, if you're the Steinbrenner family, are you rooting for them to have a bad year? So the price goes down? No. Are you rooting for them to get hurt? So the price? No, of course you're not. You want to be great, and then you'll deal with it. Then you'll see exactly how much money you're willing to pay. Let me give you game time. It's brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. So the Yankees beat Toronto 5-3. The Mets and the Nationals tonight at 7. And then, of course, the must-win for the Rangers. It's game 5 at the Garden. 6:30 is the pregame show. 7 o'clock. The puck drops. The Rangers are down 3-1 to Pittsburgh in this one, so they must win to keep their season.
That's a must win,
alive.
Michael.
It's a must. It's a mathematical must.
That's right.
You know I'm a stickler for that.
I know. It's not a must win to you unless it literally means you must win. I think it's sort of the opposite. Like, when it's an actual must win, that goes without saying. But sure, I'm with you.
Why? Why does it go without saying? You want to say it.
No, because if you're down, if one team has 3 games, you obviously must win, or the season's over.
So you never say anything that's obvious.
Not me. No.
So when we say you're listening to the Michael Kay Show, the people at the station and they know what they're listening to. Are we wasting our breath?
You know what? It's a fair point.
Yeah, that's game time. Brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, here we go, everybody. It is time for Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Now, so the Yankees won today by a score of 5-3. And their record now is 22-8. So that's the best record in baseball. They've done a lot of great things. But is everything perfect in the Bronx? No. And I'll point out some things that are not. So today, Aaron Hicks went 0-4. He's 2 for his last 25.
Not what you want.
Not what you want. Drew a lot of walks. He's drawn a lot of walks. I believe he's in the top 10 in the American League, but he has 1 home run and 5 runs batted in. Now, Anthony Rizzo went 1 for 3 today, but he is 4 for his last 37. Not what you want. Joey Gallo went 1 for 4 today. He's 5 for his last 19. Now, that's not terrible. But overall, the average is under 190 with 3 homers and 4 ribbies. Isaiah Kanafalefa was 0-for-3 today and 2 errors, but we'll concentrate on the offense, 0-for-his last 17. Remember, he got off to a terrible start, 1-for-17. Then he was in a great streak, and now he has crashed down to earth. So that's a little bit of a concern. And then finally, you've got a catching situation where they've done an unbelievable job defensively, but they are essentially The Yankees are a National League lineup from last year. That's a pitcher spot. There are pitchers that hit better than the combination of Higashioka and Trevino. Now, the Yankees have accentuated defense. I get that. But, Peter, they didn't sign up for these guys being this anemic. No. So those are just some of the things where I say winning is a great deodorant. And I thought Paul O'Neill brought up a great point during the game. He said, you don't want everybody hot at once, because if everybody's hot at once, that means everybody's going to get cold at once, and then you'll lose. He said, you want it to happen in waves where, you know, four guys are hot and maybe five guys aren't. Five guys then get hot, four guys aren't. It's very rare that you stay hot the whole year, but it hasn't been perfect, and that's why I think you can even lean into this a little bit more and feel better about the fact that they have the best record in baseball, because they have not played perfect baseball. The best part of the team has been their pitching. The pitching has been extraordinary. Today, Tyone got into trouble in the first inning. Bases loaded, nobody out. He only gave up one run. That was the ball game right there. And Clay Holmes came in, got another double play, and Chapman struggled in the ninth inning, but, you know, wiggled out. And the Yankees now go on the road feeling good about things, starting an eight-game road trip, four against the White Sox and four against Baltimore. So, all things being said, Peter, it's not perfect, but I think it can actually get better. And Cameron Maben said to me that he spoke to a lot of the Yankees in the clubhouse today, and they said, we haven't even come close to playing our best baseball yet. That's how good this team feels about itself right now.
Well, that's why you should feel good about it. I suppose the only concern, Michael, is, you know, is there a world in which, instead of it going the way you hope it's going to go, where everything starts falling into place and now they're really the best team in baseball, does it go the other way? And we sort of see some of the things we've seen in the playoffs the last couple of years, where offensively the home runs that they're getting right now from Judge and Stanton and today Glaber, those start to go away. And all of a sudden, does this team become offensively anemic in the fall?
Well, that's always a chance. I think this team is a little bit more athletic than previous ones. They've stolen more bases at this point than they did last year. But, you know, you bring up a great point with the home run today by Glaber. I think 53% of the Yankee runs have come via the home run, and that's the most in baseball. But I think they can create runs in other ways. The next closest to that is the Astros, who I believe come in at 48.7. So they're still very dependent on the home run, and they're built on the home run. And one other thing I mentioned that hasn't gone that great, Josh Donaldson hasn't hit for power. So that's a little bit of a concern as well. So there's a lot of things that you expected better from, but pitching, you know, I say winning is a great deodorant. Pitching is the greatest deodorant of anything. If you stop teams from scoring runs, Peter, you're going to win games. You're going to score enough runs to win games. And the Yankees starting staff has pitched to an under 3 ERA. The entire staff has pitched to an under 3 ERA. The bullpen has the best ERA in all of baseball. So that's pretty good. And that was a thing that was in doubt. And tomorrow is the first game that one of the five starters is not starting. And that's because of the doubleheader. They had to call up a sixth pitcher, Luis Gil, who pitched some last year and hasn't pitched that great at Triple A, but he's coming off a pretty good start. So they give him the call and the ball to pitch against the White Sox. So there you have it. Those are Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their six area locations. 1-800-919-3776. Also, Rangers have to win tonight. How do they do it? I don't know. Is Shesterkin going to stand on his head? Looks like he has to, right, Peter? Because it just doesn't make sense the way they played in front of him, and everybody wants to give him a little bit of a pass. But, hey, if you're one of the greatest goaltenders in the world, and you are, then you have to play above everybody else, and you have to make up for your team's mistake. You have to be their eraser. So if they're not covering things in front of you, you've got to somehow locate the puck and stop it. That's all there is to it. You did in the triple overtime game, but you didn't do it in games 3 and 4.
Well, and not only that, Michael, the Rangers have to create some opportunities and just get the puck on net. Louis Domingue has been great, but he is not a great goaltender. So everyone knows, in playoff hockey generally, all you want to do is keep putting that puck on net and make a goaltender think. Whether it's Grant Fuhr or Louis Domingue, and the Rangers have not done that. So they got to give themselves a chance by just putting the puck on Domingue as much as humanly possible. I guarantee you, if they have an extremely high shot count tomorrow, I bet they win this game.
Well, we'll see. We'll have the game right here on 98.7 ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to the phones and see what you're thinking, what you're talking about, what you want to know, and we'll go to Gene in Fort Lee. Gene.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Gene.
Oh, man, what a blast by a judge. Great call, Michael.
Thank you.
But just to talk about, I guess, the Yankees, but more specifically Judge, I think that home run, that walk-off that he had yesterday, that was a statement of, like, you got to pay that man. I mean, I feel personally this guy is New York. Like, this guy is the closest that we may get to Jeter. I know he has to win a ring, but his rookie year, I mean, he was almost the MVP. Last year, or the year before, I'm sorry, he was top five in MVP. I mean, I just think the Yankees, it's a no-brainer. You have a guy that you just got to pay. And I understand
I hear what you're saying, but whatever he wants, you pay him?
If he wants like 500, I'll slow down. But I think you have to work with him more than just setting like a set price. Like I don't think Cashman should have a set price on him. Try to negotiate with him and see if you could work out some sort of deal that kind of benefits him. I feel like he's done a lot for the Yankees.
Well, I mean, I would agree with you to an extent, Gene, except for the fact they didn't shortchange him in the offer. It's a great offer. Everybody in Major League Baseball said it was a great offer, but I don't begrudge Judge betting on himself. And if he continues, I mean, he's on pace, Peter, I think, for 58 home runs and 130 ribbies. So if he hits those numbers, he's going to get $40 million a year.
Yeah. But Michael, it is an unusually difficult situation for the Yankees. Like it's sort of, I would be interested to even try to find the comp where a player has yet to get his big contract. They're this good, they're this old, and they're demanding this many years. So it's a really awkward spot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard. And you know, the Yankees like to do, you know, the algorithms and running through computers, you know, what's the baseline? There is no baseline on this. There's nobody 6'7", 282 pounds, that 30 years old that you've had to sign to a long-term deal. How long is too long? How short is insulting? So I think they put a representative offer. I think they're rooting for him to have a great year, and then they'll take it from there. But, you know, there's a chance that if he becomes a free agent, you don't sign him during the season, you will lose him. Because all you need, you know, the old saying in baseball, one crazy owner. All you need is one crazy owner. I mean, did anybody think that Steve Cohen was going to give Max Scherzer $43.5 million a year? No. So if you let Aaron Judge loose, do the San Francisco Giants empty the coffers? Because they used to sell out every single game. They don't anymore. I don't think it's going to be the Dodgers because, you know, the Dodgers have a right fielder in Mookie Betts. If you believe John Heyman of the New York Post, who's an incredibly great reporter, he said the Mets aren't going to bid on him out of respect to, you know, Steve Cohen to Hal Steinbrenner. I don't know if that's true. But if that story's not true, the Mets have to be a player in this. They don't have a right fielder like Aaron Judge. And if you want to take over a city, that would be the way to do it. So unless the Yankees come to an agreement with him during the season, you do risk everything. I mean, it could get ugly. But, you know, people are calling in, and you know, I've seen it on Twitter as well. You got to give him whatever he wants. Well, that's not the way you do business, number one. Number two, you're 30 games in. Anything can happen. Let it breathe. Let it play out. Judge took a gamble that he would be effective and healthy over 6 months. So he's 1 month and 11 days into it. It's a big gamble. It's a long-term gamble. So far, he looks like he's a genius for doing it.
Yep. But it's a long season.
It is a very long season. Let's go to John Mike in Staten Island. John Mike.
Hi, good afternoon, guys.
How you doing, John Mike?
I just have a judge question.
Okay.
If he puts up great numbers for 100 to 110 games, but then comes to an injury and doesn't play the rest of the games, what would Cashman want to do and the Yankees want to do?
Well, I think that lowers his price because, John, the whole question with him is, you know, in his first 5 years in the major leagues, he's played two full seasons. And now both of those seasons, he's been the top four in MVP voting. So, I mean, the not that it's a question mark, and I don't think he's injury prone. I really don't. But I believe that they want to see him put 145 games on the back of his baseball card. And then you'll talk. But as Peter said before, you're still dealing with, okay, is he going to do it at 34? Is he going to do it at 35? I think they'll come together on the number.
Yeah,
I really do. I think they'll come together on the salary per year, average annual value, they call it. I think the sticking point could be the years. I mean, there might be a team that said, we'll give them nine. And the Yankees will say, okay, we're out. I don't think the Yankees would give them nine.
I don't think so either. And what a tough spot that is if he still demands that nine, even if the number's great. Because I imagine, Michael, they would push the number to the extreme limit.
Right.
To avoid the nine.
Right.
So if they can after this year, I mean, seven.
If we get pushes, we get pushes.
You'd think seven would be the absolute max. And yeah, if they can stretch that number up as high as they can at seven and he doesn't take it, I don't know what you do.
Now, if he want the thing that could help them out, let's say he said, because DJ LeMahieu helped them out this way. LeMahieu said, told them, I want $90 million in this contract. Whether you give it to me for 4 years, 5 years, six, seven, I don't care. I just want 90 guaranteed million. And the Yankees said, okay, we'll give you six. Now, they shouldn't give a 32-year-old a six-year deal, but they did. And he's only making $15 million a year. That's a good deal for him because he got the number he wanted. And a good deal for the Yankees because the average annual value was only 15. So if Judge says, okay, here's my deal. I want $250 million. I don't care how you give it to me. So the Yankees go, okay, we'll give you a 10-year deal, $25 million a year. Then it gets done. Then the average annual value is $25 million. And you know that in the last 4 years of the deal, you probably have to eat it. You hope that you get the best. You hope that he's an anomaly, that he could play through things. But that's how you can, you know, doctor the contract, so to speak. Let's go to Ricky in Nutley. Ricky.
Hey, Michael, Peter. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I want you guys to maybe help me with an argument I'm having with friends about the Judge contract. So we all think that the number is starting with three, like whatever his total value is going to be a three. I personally think it's going to be 330 for 9 years because I think Judge is going to look at this and say it's his only bite at the apple. And I think he wants to outdo Stanton and Mookie Betts. So I think he wants 330. My friend thinks the agreement they're going to come to is 300 over a 9-year period. And then my one friend thinks Judge will go nuclear and want 360 because he thinks he's the second best baseball player in the league and he deserves that dollar amount. Because we all think with Judge it's about the dollar amount, not the years, not the annual value. He wants to be paid like the second best baseball player behind Trout. So just wanted to hear what you guys have to say.
I don't know which friend, you know, I can, you know, connect to this, but I believe that he wants a higher average annual value than Rendon or Arenado. I think they're at 36, and I think he probably wants more than Gerrit Cole too. I think the one guy that he would accept being paid less money than per year is Trout. Because the offer that the Yankees gave him, Ricky, the offer the Yankees gave him, Ricky, it's more than Stanton's average annual value, and it's more than Mookie
Betts. Why do you think he's so hooked up on the annual value? I feel like he wants to know, like, I'm going to be worth $360 million or $330 or $300.
Well,
I don't
you know what?
Think he cares about annual value.
Yeah, but see, that's where you run into problems. If you're Aaron Judge, Ricky, he's 30 years old. So if he wants a $300 million deal, I don't know how they're going to work it. I mean, they offered him, I guess, 7 years at $30.5 million. So that was over 210. If he's locked into 300 or 360, those other guys got it. Like Francisco Lindor got that total number, and Manny Machado got that number, and Fernando Tatis got that number because they were in their 20s. Unfortunately, Aaron has the fact that he went to college playing against him. That's a killer. So he's going to enter the free agent market at 30. And next year he's going to play at 31. That's why we are at this point.
See that, kids? College is a terrible idea. Oh, wait, sorry. That's not what I meant. I just mean in this case specifically.
Wow.
May have been problematic.
Let's go to Tyler in Mayapack. Tyler?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call. First, I just wanted to say I am a negative fan in general, but I really do smell something off with this team. You know, they're obviously off to a hot start, but they've only played one team with a winning record, being the Blue Jays. So, you know, I'm just not as confident in the first-place team that I should be.
But wait a minute. You discount the Red Sox because the Red Sox are now a bad team, but when the Yankees played them, they weren't supposed to be bad.
But I mean, if you look at every team's record right now, they're, you know, there's only one team above 500.
So. All right, so they got the White Sox up next.
So we'll see how they do in that series. But I did want to make a point about your call last night, Michael. I just wanted to ask, and first, you know, as a Yankees fan for 24 years since my birth, I grew up watching your broadcast and having you on my television 100-plus days a year, you know, I've enjoyed every minute of it. Nice. But I just wanted to ask if you think that your call last night, you know, the up in the air, which really was great, do you think that can be one of those slogans for the team going forward this year, you know, like the thumbs down and the savages in the box?
You mean up for grabs?
Up for grabs, sorry. Yeah, no.
I don't think so, Tyler. I mean, it was said in the moment. I don't think that becomes a slogan or anything like that. It looks like, Peter, that their thing this year is doing the gritty. That's the thing.
People love doing the gritty.
Yeah, so Glaber did it today, and Judge did it scoring yesterday.
It's a little unoriginal, if I'm being fair.
But well, yeah, it's
cute.
It's why is his name slipping? Jamar Chase's thing.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. I feel like in the NFL, every receiver did it practically. Maybe I'm wrong.
Cameron taught me how to do it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
is there a video of that?
No, but I can do it, and I will do it.
Okay, I look forward to seeing it.
I want you to see it. I think
Chocolate Blanco.
Yeah, that's me. All right,
have
we'll
fun.
Come back.
You have fun with the mayor, by the way. When we come back, tell us about your time with the mayor.
I will do that. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay, Rosenberg, and you. We'll be joined by Yes in a moment, but right now, right on the radio on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Petey,
hi.
Do you believe this is the last signed merch we're giving away, or do you think they'll win tonight?
Maybe I'm being that guy because I root for the Penguins, but I think the Rangers are going to win tonight. I do. I think the home crown will step up. I think they'll catch Domingue early, and I think they'll at least send this thing back to Pittsburgh.
I have to send out a birthday wish today.
Please do, then.
And this one really hits different for me because I've known this guy close to 40 years.
Okay.
And I can't picture him this age. So today is Mike Lupica's birthday.
Wow.
He's 70 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike was like the star young pup Jimmy Olsen columnist at the Daily News.
I know, yeah.
He's 70 years old. Now, if you look at Mike doesn't look 70. He looks like he's about 50. But I can't even wrap my mind around it, Peter.
Well, it's very – but I'll put it this way, though. I mean, I've seen Lupica on TV since
forever, right?
I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I'm 42. I remember seeing Lupica on the sports reporters probably when I was 11, you know, 12 years old. 30, that's 30 years ago. Yeah, he was 40.
Amazing.
Crazy.
So he I don't know if I've ever told you, he played a really big role in the way my career went.
Go ahead.
So I was at the New York Post, and he was at the Daily News. And, you know, the year that Billy Martin was the manager, I mean, it was like, for me, if I was a baseball player, it would be like a 58 home run year. Look, Bear agrees.
Sure.
150 runs batted in. I mean, I was everything. Billy told me everything. I don't know why Billy just took a liking to me. I knew stuff that was happening 3 days in advance and wrote it in the Daily News. The New York Post put it on the front page at times. So I was flying high. So there's a late game one night at Yankee Stadium, and I'm walking out of the old Yankee Stadium, and Lupica's walking out with me. And I see Billy Martin's car. This is about midnight now, after I'd written my story. I see Billy Martin's car in the parking lot. And I go, that's not a good sign that he's here this late. Mike says, oh. I said, I got to go back in. I got to see what's going on. So Mike had already filed his column and whatever. So he said, okay. Well, I went back in. Billy was sitting there at his desk drinking. And he was a little bit tipsy, but, you know, communicable. And he gave me an unbelievable story that the umpires were against him and that if it continued, he was going to resign as the manager of the Yankees. He didn't want to hurt the Yankees. Front page of the Post. And Lupica goes into the publisher of the Daily News and said, whatever it costs, you must hire this guy. Whatever it costs. He's got a work ethic like I've never seen. You must hire this guy. And the Daily News hired me.
And how do you know the story? From your boss at the Daily News?
Yeah. I got a call at the end of that season. Said, Mike Lupica said, we have to hire you. What's it going to take? And so I gave an outrageous number, at least for a newspaper writer. The guy goes, okay, done.
It was that, and that number was $12 an hour.
You know what? And I gladly accepted it, embraced it, and ran off.
And look at you now. Now you're making calls that the internet's celebrating on Aaron Judge's first walk-off home run.
That's right. That's right. Let's go to Joe in Connecticut. Joey!
Jojo.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? Peter?
Good.
That's good. Hey, listen. Judge hit that walk-off. And did you know that there was only four of the Yankees that did it?
A walk-off home run?
Yeah, there was only four other Yankees that did it in Yankee history. And I was wondering if you knew at least one of them out of the four.
Well, I mean, Derek Jeter hit a walk-off home run in the World Series.
Derek Jeter did it. There was three more now. And Peter could get in on it if he knows.
I think Mickey Mantle did it.
Nope, Mick never did it.
No, I think he did. I think we had I think we had a trivia question today about walk-off home runs. Yeah, I believe you. All right, so who are your other three?
I can tell you who did it.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right, it was Derek Jeter, Mark Teixeira, Lou Gehrig, and Bill Mouskouron.
Were
the only four that ever hit a walk-off home run. There was nobody else.
Well, if that is in fact the case, it's an unbelievable stat. I can't believe in the long history of the Yankees that only four people have hit walk-off home runs, but... I'll take Joe's word for it. He sounds very authoritative.
That call from Joe was so old school. It sounded like he was actually talking to us on a reel-to-reel.
It also sounded like he was playing roulette in the background.
No, that was to me the reel-to-reel.
Oh, really?
I hear what you're saying, too. Yeah.
All right, so very interesting press conference.
We haven't talked about this yet.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it when we come back because I think it's big, really big. Really big. So stick around. Stick around. Sean Marks had some interesting things to say right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8. SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Rangers have to win tonight. Is Shesterkin going to stand on his head? Looks like he has to, right? Because it just doesn't make sense the way they played in front of him, and everybody wants to give him a little bit of a pass. But, hey, if you're one of the greatest goaltenders in the world, and you are, then you have to play above everybody else, and you have to make up for your team's mistake. You have to be their eraser. So if they're not covering things in front of you, you've got to somehow locate the puck and stop it. That's all there is to it. You did in the triple overtime game, but you didn't do it in games 3 and 4.
Well, and not only that, Michael, the Rangers have to create some opportunities and just get the puck on net. Louis Domingue has been great, but he is not a great goaltender. So, in playoff hockey generally, all you want to do is keep putting that puck on net and make a goaltender think. So I guarantee you, if they have an extremely high shot count tomorrow, I bet they win this game.
The Michael K. Show.
I want you to see it.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Listen, you know I like the older people in the world, right, Peter?
I know you do.
Well, the previous caller, again, it sounded so fishy to me. The gentleman could not be more wrong. He said four Yankees. Gleyber Torres had one 3 days ago.
Wait, what did he say it was again?
Yankees with walk-off home runs. He said four in the history of the franchise. Well, I'll start in 1905. Willie Keeler, Frank LaPorte, Roy Hartzell, Ed Sweeney, Frank Baker again, Babe Ruth, Wally Pipp, Roger Peckinpah, Wally Pipp, Elmer Smith, Babe Ruth. He did it four times in 2 years. I mean, come on. Babe Ruth again, Tony Lazzari. Babe Ruth again.
Oh, my Lord.
So, I'm sorry. I love you, sir, but you couldn't be more wrong. Jim Leyritz had one in the 1995 playoffs.
It really is unreal, by the way. The amount of times people call us out for things, they sit around in their basement. Cheeto, and I'm not saying Joe's a Cheeto dust guy, but he sounds like an older gentleman. He'd be more like a Saltines dust guy.
Aaron Boone.
Well, I was going to say.
Chris Chambliss in 1976. I mean, I must be exhausted. I slept 4 hours last night. I must be exhausted to have even let him say it.
Well, and I will not take – I should have stepped up for you, but, like, it sounded impossible to me. But since you were actually answering it with a tone of, like, there was some consideration, I laid out.
Since 2011, Peter, Beltran, Chris Young, Brian McCann, Mark Teixeira, Clint Frazier, Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge. Come on.
The only thing that made last night a big deal was that it was Judge's first.
Right.
So this year, just to, for those keeping track at home, though, he had his first walk-off win by what? Was there a walk?
Yeah, it was a walk-off walk.
Walk-off walk. And then did he also have a walk-off base hit?
I think so.
I feel like this is the third one.
Yeah,
and this was the homer. Yeah.
And there's only four active players that have more home runs that have never had a walk-off, the number one player being J.D. Martinez, who has over 250 home runs and has never had a walk-off home run.
It's sad. It's sad what people try to do.
Can't do it to us, though, because we've got the Google.
Well, that's right. Unlike most people, we have access to the Internet.
All right, so Sean Marks had a press conference today talking about, moving forward, what's going to happen. And he had some interesting things to say. Now, we'll let you hear from Sean. But for the most part, he did not guarantee the return of one Kyrie Irving. He said, we have to see if people want to be here. We want people who want to be here.
Ooh.
And he also said that he was wrong previously when he said last year that James Harden and Kyrie Irving, he mentioned that, both would sign extensions. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Whatever they decide to do, and if it was me running the team, I would give Kyrie a one-year deal, and that's what he would continue to get. Give him top dollar for 1 year. Then if fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm not giving you 5 years, $250 million, so you could just leisurely walk away whenever you want. You've done it before. Now, this year was a different thing, the vaccine. Okay. You could actually make a case for that. The year before, because of social unrest, he had to walk away because he couldn't handle it, meaning that it wasn't as important to Kevin Durant. It wasn't as important to all the other players that actually played. It wasn't as important to LeBron James. Only Kyrie had to leave the scene. So, I mean, I don't – but if they do decide to draw that line in the sand, Peter, I guarantee you that – Kevin Durant will leave the team. Kevin Durant will demand a trade. That's what you're dealing with. So if you do not sign Kyrie Irving to this long-term deal, and if he wants to return, you are assuring yourself that you're starting from scratch because Kevin Durant's going to want out. They are, of all the things Kyrie has done that some could say are really anti-team, Peter, you follow them as closely as anybody. Have you ever heard Kevin Durant say one sideways thing about him?
No.
That's his guy. They're brothers.
Seemingly.
Well, he must be some actor, my friend.
Well, just because he hasn't said anything publicly does not mean that if push came to shove, Kyrie decides to move on, they don't want to give him the extension, that he doesn't go, all right, man, well, listen, I'm still not going to say anything bad about him, but so long. We don't know. We don't know that. I understand why you'd be concerned, because you're right. It seems like he's always ridden for him in every sense. But maybe this would be a bridge too far. Maybe KD has just grown and become more mature and been able to table some of these feelings of annoyance or resentment. We really don't know.
That's not the way I'm betting. I think Kyrie is the reason he's there. I mean, really, of all the places he could have gone, the Brooklyn Nets he chose, only because Kyrie wanted to go. Don't you think that the stage for a player of the star quality of Kevin Durant was actually 33rd and 7th? That guy should be playing at Madison Square Garden every night.
For his agent and business partner's favorite team?
Yeah.
Bing bong!
And then Kyrie, before we hear from Marks, I don't know if you've all heard out there, Kyrie had a Twitch tantrum yesterday. Here is Kyrie on Twitch.
It's but so long y'all can say the same jokes. But so long. It's but so long y'all can say the same jokes. Oh, Kyrie, what are you doing at home? That's how y'all sound to me. Oh, what are you doing at home? Are you going to Cancun? Where are you? Are you at home? Oh, Kyrie, you suck. All right. What, babe?
What are you up to? Tell me everything.
What are you doing? Oh, my God. Go back to Cleveland. Oh, my God. Boston hates you. Oh, my God. That's how y'all sound to me, cockroaches. That's how y'all sound to me.
He don't sound like a happy guy, Peter.
I mean, listen, it's not the end of the world.
No.
I do think his voice was funny. Let me just be honest. I liked his impression of the Cheeto Dust people. And by the way, we just sat here talking about Cheeto Dust people. So
right.
I got no problem taking shots at the trolls who live in his comments. I get it. The question would be, though, why do you need to do that? Like, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. But I just wish someone could get through to him on that, like, he could be the person that he, I think, would like to be if he could just show a little bit of discipline in other ways with the way he chooses to talk.
It's interesting because Kyrie is one of those stars that I don't think he really seeks out stardom. I don't think he needs our approval. I don't think he cares. But, boy, if he just made an attempt, he would be off the chart the most popular player.
He's so good.
He's a great player. He's handsome. He could sell any product to anybody because he's really, really great with the way he can articulate his thoughts. He's just amazing. A lot of players can't. A lot of players can't. This guy is top of the shelf, like as big a pristine superstar as it could be, and he just plays. He wants to not be that guy. He wants to be the irritant and the annoyance. God bless him. He has that right. Some people don't want fame. And I'm not commenting on whether or not he wants fame. That's up to him. Some people don't like the spotlight. But, I mean, you are on a team. A tennis player and a golfer, they decide to walk away. They're just hurting themselves and their earning potential. You walk away from a team sport, you're hurting the team, especially when you're one of the best players in the world. And Sean Marks said today that the Kyrie situation did not help matters this year. So let's hear from Marks. He was asked what needs to change.
To be quite frank, there's a lot of things, and I've touched on it before. It starts with roster construction. It starts with our preparation, and it starts with the summertime. You know, we have prided ourselves on the past with finding players with a chip on their shoulder, with a resilience, with something to prove. We're going to have to go back to that. We're going to have to go back to looking a little bit more at development, looking more at finding the right characteristics of a player that fits here. You know, as long as we have the roster of returning players that we have, I think our goal remains the same. Our goal is going to be, for the foreseeable future, to be the last team standing. So there's a lot of questions that both Steve, myself, and the rest of the organization have to look in the mirror and ask each other, you know, was that the right decision? And at the time, was it the right decision? Could we have done something slightly different? And, you know, we'll see how that plays out over the next 3-4 months. And that's a long time to think about it. So I know Steve never had 5 months in an off season to think about this, but I'm not trying to make light of it, but that's a long time, you know, to really do some deep soul searching and think about, like, what we can change.
All right, now here's the money quote. Are you committed to Kyrie long term?
Look, I think that's something we've been discussing and we will continue to debrief on and discuss throughout this offseason. And it's honestly not just Kyrie. I mean, you bring Kyrie up, but we have decisions to make on a variety of different free agents throughout our roster. We haven't had any of those discussions yet, so it'd be unfair for me to comment on, you know, how it looks with us and Kyrie, because to be quite frank, he has some decisions to make on his own. So he has to look at what he's going to do with his player option and so forth like that. But I think we know what we're looking for. You know, we're looking for guys that want to come in here, be part of something bigger than themselves, play selfless, play team basketball, and be available. And that goes not only for Kyrie, but for everybody here.
Yeah, but he mentioned it, Peter, while talking about Kyrie.
Yep.
So the answer was, of course we want him back. That's not the answer he gave. He had a lot of qualifiers in there, and a lot of them point directly at Kyrie. Availability, wanting to be here, being on the court, all of those things, those are directed at Kyrie.
100%.
And I believe that the move for the team moving forward is at most give him a one-year deal. If he opts out and wants a five-year deal, you really have to say goodbye. And I'm talking about a guy who is a transcendently great player. But you can't have the uncertainty of what's going to bug Kyrie today that's going to force him to walk away. And you can't say, okay, that's hyperbolic. No, it's not. We lived it. And I'm subtracting the vaccine situation.
So which are you referring to?
When there was all the social unrest with the killings and stuff like that, he just walked away from the team. Nobody else did. I know that the three of us, me, you, and Don, we were gutted by what was happening in the world. But you know what? You got to go to work. You have a contract. You have to go to work. Kevin Durant went to work. LeBron James went to work. You don't get to be the guy who's the social justice warrior when you're on a team. Are you on a team or not?
Well, you can do it. You just shouldn't do it at the cost of your teammates.
Right. Well, yeah. If Djokovic wants to do that, right? He can do it. Walk off. Don't play Wimbledon. Don't play the French Open. Who does it impact? You. Kyrie walks off. Who does it impact? Impacts everybody on the Nets, including Joe Tsai, Sean Marks, and Steve Nash. It's that big of a decision. This isn't some small part of what they do. It's a gigantic part of what they do. I think it's one of the most difficult decisions that any professional sports organization is going to have to make. Because I believe if you draw the line on him, you're going to lose Durant. Now, you believe that could be otherwise. Time will tell.
I'm just hopeful. Like I just say that because we haven't ever heard recently that KD is thrilled with all things Kyrie. Maybe his relationship is really strong. We know that KD signed his extension.
Right, but what does that mean? I mean, we've seen guys sign extensions. They want to get out right away. He's got his money, so now he could say, I want to go. I want to go.
Which decision's worse, the Yankees Judge decision or the Nets Kyrie decision?
I think the Nets decision is tougher because I think you lose two players with one move. I might be wrong, but I believe you lose two players, two of the best players in basketball.
Well,
so
and the problem
if
is,
you lose, if you draw the line with Kyrie, said no, we don't want you back, and then Kevin Durant wants out, you're essentially starting over. If Judge leaves, it would infuriate Yankee fans, but you know what? They'd replace him. Now, would they replace him with Aaron Judge? No, there's only one Aaron Judge, but they'd replace him with a good player. So I think the Kyrie decision is much tougher. Now, in a vacuum, Peter, I don't think the Kyrie decision's tough at all. I wouldn't give that guy a five-year deal on a bet. Why would you? And I'm coming from a place, before people call in, when you can have your say, I've said it on the air, people make fun of me about it. I cherish watching this guy play basketball. I'm amazed by what he can do with the basketball. I am flabbergasted when I watch him play at the top of his game. I want to watch him play. I want him to be on the Nets. But not if these are the rules of engagement. I'm sorry.
And that's what makes this so bad, because in one sense, it would be a terrible decision to have to extend Kyrie. But if you lose KD, you're now completely starting over. The whole experiment is officially failed.
Yep.
You have to punt. That's tough.
Jamie DeVault said, I love how Michael K makes fun of how Kyrie sounded on his social when he makes fun of Cheeto Dust people or callers he doesn't like in the same vein. I'm not making fun of how Kyrie sounded at all, Jamie. I never said that. I just think it's a bad look to go after fans. And these are haters, so I understand him feeling that way. But this is talk radio, Jamie. This is a lot different than being the face of a franchise. Again, you're representing a lot more people than just you, Kyrie. I'm essentially representing me. Peter represents Peter. Don represents Don. And I wasn't making fun of how he sounded. Peter actually complimented him on how he sounded.
I thought it was kind of funny. I just don't think it was necessary. That's all.
Yeah, he put stuff out there that, I mean, does he really need to do it? I think he likes to be, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, I think he likes to be a provocateur.
I mean, listen, I agree with that. And I have to point this out every once in a while because people forget. He did go to Duke, guys. There's a little bit of nozzle there. I'm sorry. And nerdiness. And sort of awkward nerdiness. I'm not saying that as a diss. I'm just saying, realistically, last night he got on and played Grand Theft Auto on Twitch by himself, laughing at his own jokes and talking trash to trolls. Not a big deal. It doesn't make anyone a bad person or someone you can't have on your team, but you can't tell me it's the coolest behavior of all time. You can't tell me it's the equivalent of Drake and Jack Harlow at Churchill Downs the other day. It was a little awkward, and that's okay. But to me, none of these issues, we talk about all the things Kyrie says, the way that he can rub people the wrong way, kind of look down his nose at the media, really speak in a generally dismissive and uninformed way about the media. All of those things would be basically irrelevant if he showed up to work every day.
Right. If you do your thing, you could do your thing.
It really – I'm not saying there wouldn't still be people like us who talk about it, because guess what? He's a huge star, one of the best players in the world. We're going to talk about it. But ultimately, if you're showing up to work every day and your team's performing, what can anyone say? The problem is the combo, Michael. The combination of these things that are annoying and not necessarily a good look. And then you heard it from Sean Marks today, the real issue. Do you want to be there every day? Did he want to be in Boston? It didn't feel like it. He gets the deal. He gets to go to Brooklyn. He gets to Brooklyn. I understand crazy things were happening in the world, but 2 years in a row, his belief system, which sounds like it's very moral, and that's great, but his belief system kept him out of how many games, Michael? 70?
A lot,
When you add up last year and this year?
Yeah.
70 games or so? Maybe 60 games? So that's a problem, and that highlights all the other things that normally you might just go, hey, he's a little bit of a nozzle, but whatever, he's the best. No, but he doesn't show up every day. The team was eliminated in the first round. They got thrashed.
And really, his excuse for the vaccine is not that he's an anti-vaxxer. He's made that clear. But he wanted to be a voice for the voiceless. Okay, cool. So when they lifted the mandate, you shouldn't have played. You're still a voice for the voiceless. I mean, imagine the statement you would have made if they lifted the mandate and you go, no, I'm not playing until all those police officers and firemen and people in city jobs get their jobs back. That's being a voice for the voiceless.
Well, hold on. If you actually look into it, Michael, he did an interview last week on KD's podcast. If you listen to what he said, he actively was trying to find a workaround, it sounded like. And he was talking to the mayor's office. He was talking to people. He said, I reached out to all the politicians. And basically they told me, we can't do something for you that we can't do for everyone else. So the voice for the voiceless thing is a joke. He wanted to find a way around it so he could play. He wasn't standing with the people. I mean, like, it's fine that you didn't want to do it. But, like, if you were calling politicians to try to get a workaround, bro, I'm sorry, that's not the same as standing with the people.
One more thing from Sean Marks. He really elaborated on needing guys who want to be here.
100%. We have to factor all of that in. Honestly, where we are, when you're giving somebody a minimum contract and it doesn't pan out, it still factors in to how you're building a roster and how much tax you're paying and so forth. So certainly when you're looking at players that are making $30 or $40 million or potentially making that, you have to factor in everything. And that's the hard part of the business, right? We can all see what they can do on the court. It's one thing when you're evaluating players, whether it's at the college level or at the pros, like what makes them tick, what goes into, you know, what drives them. Do they want to be part of this? You know, are they motivated by something that maybe that's not good for the whole team here? So those are questions we're going to have to ask ourselves and also ask the players that we want to bring back in here.
Maybe I'm 1,000% wrong, everybody. I think he's talking directly to Kyrie. Who else on the Nets can you question whether they want to be here or not? Kevin Durant plays his butt off. What player on the Nets doesn't want to be here? He's talking to Kyrie. And Ben Simmons. And Ben Simmons.
God. Man. What a job Sean Marks has.
You know what? He brought him in. He was building something beautiful here, and then he decided to accelerate things, and I don't blame him.
And I understand, but I would just like to say, I have been sitting here since the second the Harden trade happened.
What in the world am I doing?
Saying, did they need that? I said it right then. You already have KD and Kyrie and a really nice assortment of young players, one of which has turned out to be even better than he was then in Jared Allen, right?
Yeah.
And so you're telling me the team they could have had if they just kept KD and Kyrie, not worried about Harden, and still had LeVert, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, all these pieces, you're telling me they wouldn't have been better off?
And Kevin Durant.
It was a greedy. I wonder if he views it that way in his moments alone. Does he view the Harden move now as just an unnecessary one? Or was it like, you have an opportunity to get one of the best players in the world. Oh, let's add another.
Andrew, can you please try to get Sean on in the next couple of days? I'd like to be able to, you know, the two of us and Don, ask him questions. These are questions I think that are legitimate, and he certainly is agile and on his feet mentally, so let's see. Let's see what he has to say. All right, we'll take your phone calls on this, 1-800-919-3776. Bears, very excited, right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now, before we take your call, Sean Marks did address the Harden trade, and here is the GM of the Nets.
It's a two-way street. Whenever you bring a player in here to any organization, or anybody for that matter, not even a player, and it's not a fit, you know, you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, okay, what could we have done differently? You know, the onboarding piece is easy, right? Everybody can say, hey, look, come here, I can sell this, that, and that. It's the offboarding piece. That's where you've got to make sure, well, why? Did I debrief on this? Did I really debate? Did I really do everything I could? Did we as an organization do everything we could for not only James, for everybody that comes through those doors? So it's a good point for us to reflect on it. But again, I think when players' minds are made up and James's mind is made up, you know, I think it's also foolish to try and change their minds to that extent too. Like, you know, if it's not a fit and you're paying a guy $30+ million and it doesn't work, you have to make a decision. And, you know, I think that's something that we did. We pivoted quickly, moved, and we weren't stuck trying to figure out decisions and what could have been. And what, you know, it's time to move on from that perspective.
Yeah, but he really answered the question why he felt the need to have to bring in Harden and break up the rest of the team. So if we ever get a chance to talk to him, we will. By the way, I love Peter.
Okay.
But
what I do.
In the years that he's been on the show, never has he misled an audience more than is said with confidence and conviction hardwood pick on the money line to take the Sixers. And I on the air said, really, in Miami, that's not a good bet. He didn't want to listen to me. I'm just an old hag.
No, you know what that was? That was stupid friendship getting in the way. It was
because
Andrew.
Of Andrew?
Yeah, Andrew's feeling so good. I felt so happy.
I try every
for
day.
Him. I got caught up, and then, Andrew, that was not a great performance.
Friendship is a really bad reason to make a bet.
And also a stretch.
A stretch to call him a friend?
Yeah.
Wow.
He didn't think of you like that.
Wow. But it's real. I felt it. I felt I should do it. And
yeah, bad call.
it was not good. They were bad. Awful. They were beaten from pillar to post. But don't worry, Andrew, it makes you feel any better. I then decided to throw down a little money afterwards to make up for it on Dallas.
On the Mavs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that played out nice. So all that money I made from two nights ago, all gone.
Let's go to Mark in Dix Hills. Mark.
First off, fellas, great call last night. I mean, your call was fabulous, and it was
great
that the guys took a picture of you showing Michael. It's amazing to get behind the scenes a little bit and see the ferocity that you had making that call. It was fabulous, and it was a fabulous win. Now,
thanks.
Peter, why are you defending Kyrie Irving? Peter, he's not a team player.
What?
He has a very bad public image, and he's unlikable. You say he's a great star. Great stars, okay, in this game of basketball also have to be a team player.
Agreed.
Michael Jordan was a team player with Pippen. And let me tell you, Marx is going to move on. The Nets are not going to be handcuffed by this guy. Enough shenanigans.
But Mark,
he screwed up the whole season for
I don't disagree.
This year with
I just,
that whole business with the shot. I mean, that was BS.
But Mark, my only disagreement with you is, when did I not say everything that you're saying?
Yeah, he did not.
No, you just did a few minutes ago.
I said he's an unbelievable player. Mark, he's an unbelievable player. You can't take that away from him. Now, whether or not he's a team player, you could take that away from him, but you cannot ever cast aspersions on the type of player that he is. LeBron does not win that title in Cleveland without Kyrie Irving. Let's go to Varel in Brooklyn. Varel.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Second time caller. I got in one time a while ago when you weren't there. It was just me and Peter on the show.
Welcome back.
But everyday listener. But want to throw this out there, Michael. This is going to be a take. It might be a little tough, but we got to talk about it. So I hear you talk a lot about, you know, Kyrie taking time off during the protests and riots and feeling like, you know, you feel like he shouldn't be able to take that time off or he shouldn't take that time off. But something that I sit with, you know, as a black man in America and hearing a white man in America speak about that is sometimes I don't know if it's fair to say that he shouldn't take that time off from your opinion, because you don't sit and live as a black man in America. So you don't know the kind of emotional toll that it takes on black men in America to see other black men in America be murdered and be brutalized by police and how that affects us as black men, black women, you know, black children moving forward. So I think we need to, yes, you know, he's a basketball player and he's on the team. And of course there's a team sport, but you know, we don't know how those things affect him, you know, personally, because I know how it affected me. And it was tough some days to get out of bed and go to work as well.
But you did.
And I work in a school, so I go there sometimes.
Of course you do. I think your point is really well taken, that, you know, two white guys talking about this and both saying, I don't think it's the thing to do on an issue that was what he was dealing with as a black man in America. I totally get why that's a tenuous conversation. But I think, and Michael, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but I feel like in this case, no one said it's wrong that he did it. But if you're the Nets and you're considering whether you want to sign him, don't you still have to look at the fact that regardless of what the reasoning was, for 2 years in a row, he was unable to play for you every night.
Varel, your point is well taken. I always feel uncomfortable talking about these issues, but I don't feel uncomfortable saying what I said about Kyrie, because all I'm saying is LeBron went to work. Well, it didn't affect LeBron. And it could be a white or a black person. We can't speak about anything now because we can't be in anybody's shoes. So, I mean, if LeBron and Kevin Durant went to work, well, I'm sure they were affected. It was a terrible moment in the history of this country. How could they not be affected? But you know what? They're team players and they went to work. That's my only point. I'm not saying that Kyrie should not have been devastated. We all were. I'm a white guy and I was devastated by what happened. I'm ashamed of what happened. But if other black men could go to work, why was Kyrie the only guy in the NBA that could not bring himself to go to work? That's my question, Varel.
Right. No, I get you. That's a fair question. But also, I think the thing that we need to know, right, or we need to understand maybe is, you know, the way Kyrie deals with it may not be the way LeBron and Kevin Durant deal with it. Maybe he feels like, you know what, this isn't for me. Maybe what I'm feeling inside is not, I'm there's things I want to do that are more important than going to play basketball. And I think he's shown that, like, basketball is, like, he really treats it as a job. You know, it's not his life.
Right. But, like, Pharrell, you're almost making the argument for me in the sense that I think you're right. Like, I think Kyrie sees the NBA as something that he does to get a check. And that's cool. I have no moral judgment on that. But my question to you, Varel, and tell me what you would do. If you're running the Brooklyn Nets, you saw how its time in Boston ended. You saw the time he missed in 2020, 2021, and then the vaccine thing. If you were forced, he pulls out of his contract and says, I want a long-term extension. Would you trust that he's going to be available for you? Or would you say, I have too much evidence that says I can't count on you?
Oh, no, Peter, you're 100% right. If I'm Sean Marks, I'm not giving Kyrie a long-term deal. I'm with Michael. I'm giving him 1 year top dollar every year, and hopefully I can find a way to say, listen, you need to play 80% of our games.
Well, Varel,
unless you have a legitimate injury.
Thank you for calling and having a conversation that requires a lot of nuance with a lot of nuance. We appreciate it.
And I also have to tell you this, Varel. You're a teacher, which is a very, very great profession. You should be a broadcaster. What a voice.
Beautiful voice.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Listen, I'll come on the show once a week. Let me get a spot. You don't even got to pay me. I'll be there.
Listen, I have an idea I'm working on, Varel. There could be a spot for you. I have an idea I'm cooking up.
Listen, Peter, me, my boy Keyshawn, we think we're like the new NWO anyway. We could get this thing running. Me, you, and Key.
All right, so send me a tweet, Varel. Send me a tweet or a DM.
Oh, say no more. I got you. I'll send you a tweet later with Key Twitty on it.
All right, man.
All right, man. Thank you, Varel.
All right, y'all have a good one.
All right.
Yep, bye-bye.
All right. So we just signed a new talent here on ESPN, which is great. We'll come back. We'll take more phone calls. We have a big ENN leading right into the pregame show for the Rangers, and then do or die for the Rangers. They either win and live to tell another day, or they lose and they go home and golf. 1-800-919-3776.
Golf is garbage.
Rosenberg and you, although Don is off, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.